You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast for Thursday, November 19th, 2020. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com, and today's episode is brought to you by Pepsi. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season is different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch, because Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day. Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. A little bit later, I will be joining David of Locked On Chargers for our crossover Thursday show ahead of the Jets' Week 10 game against the Los Angeles Chargers. But before we get to that, we have some news to catch up on over the last few days. And the top story is a move that I think is long overdue. The Jets finally cut Pierre Desir. They signed him this year on a one-year contract worth around $5.5 million. And at the time the Jets made it, I thought it was a gamble worth taking because Desir was just 1 year removed away from being the number one corner on a Colts team that made the divisional round of the playoffs. He is a guy with a reputation for knowing how to play zone. The Jets were clearly going to be a team that played a lot of zone this year on defense. They needed a cornerback. So at the time, I thought this was a roll of the dice that seemed to make sense. It seemed like it was a relatively low-cost move. I say a lot of things that turn out to be incorrect on this show, but I'm not sure there are many things that will ever be more incorrect than what I said when the Jets signed Desir about how it was a risk worth taking, because this just did not work out at all. I mean, when I think about horrible prognostications, the only thing that might be worse than this is the time I said I thought Jared Goff looked more promising than Patrick Mahomes. That might be the only prediction I've ever made that's worse than saying that Pierre Desir was worth signing, because Desir, and it did not even cost the Jets that much. It's not like it was a Trumaine Johnson type contract. They're out of it after this year, and even though it was a 1 year deal, it did not cost them that much money. It's just Desir was so bad that it defied description how bad the guy was. He just showed no interest in challenging receivers. The cushions there were just enormous. And the thing about, you know, a cushion is, yes, part of it's that, you know, you want to give yourself a little bit of space so that receivers can't run past you. But giving a big cushion does not mean you just allow a completion in front of you on anything, you know, any pass shorter than where you're lined up. You need to be able to read the play and drive on the football. And Desir just did not do that. And, you know, I think the play that will live in infamy for Desir, it was in his final game with the Jets. It was in the fourth quarter as New England was launching a comeback where there was a completion made on him. And he pretty much just did not put much effort into bringing down the guy who caught the football. And he ended up taking it another 15, 20 yards down the field before he was finally pushed out of bounds. This is not a guy the Jets will miss, and this was the right move. It's not going to make a big difference, but you at least get somebody onto the roster now. You open up a roster spot for somebody who at least has some theoretical upside, which is not anything Pierre Desir had, and it also opens up playing time for Bryce Hall. So, a move that's overdue, a move that did not work out. This is a bad signing. There's no other way to put it. Also at the corner position, Brian Poole has been placed on injured reserve. Poole was one of the few players on defense who actually was reliable, so to the extent that Jets' defense could get worse, it probably has without Poole. Again, you open up some playing time for some less experienced guys, but Poole was really solid in the slot. And in the final year of his contract, maybe this gives the Jets an opportunity to see, you know, get a younger guy some experience, because I think ultimately the decision on whether or not you bring back Poole comes down to whether you think that there's actually a young player on this roster capable of internally replacing him. So the Jets will be without Poole. Jets also add an offensive lineman, Pat Elflein, who was waived by the Minnesota Vikings. Ironically, this is a guy a lot of Jets fans wanted when he was drafted in 2017. He was a third-round pick of Minnesota, played center at the start of his career, then moved to guard. And the fact the Vikings have waived him shows you that he's not very good, but he might be better than Alex Lewis, and he's probably better than the other backups the Jets had on the offensive line. This is not an offensive line that has much depth, so maybe he can help them a little bit. I mean, he's not going to make this a good offensive line, but it's possible he's an upgrade. I mean, it says more about the guys that are here right now than it does about the player the Jets just acquired. But you know, it's possible he could help this team. Possible elf line could. If nothing else, be better than what the Jets had, and this is an audition for him because he's in the last year of his contract, so he'll get a chance to show the Jets whether he should be part of the team's future going forward. Also, some players coming off IR, the Jets have activated linebacker Patrick Owosso, who I would not be surprised to see get some playing time. When the Jets signed him, it was kind of insurance at the linebacker position. He's started 32 games in his career, and the Jets have not had the linebackers on the field they were expecting. You know, C.J. Mosley obviously opted out in the summer, and Avery Williamson is now in Pittsburgh. So there could be some playing time for him. And again, this is another guy who has a chance to audition to be part of the Jets' future. And then a small move, Frankie Louvu was designated to return to practice from injured reserve. I mean, Louvu is not that important of a player for this team. So that's the news of the last few days for the Jets. There have been a number of roster moves. Of course, they're 0-9, so none of these moves is really going to make a huge difference for this season, but a few things worth looking at. Now, ahead on our show, I'm going to join David of Locked On Chargers for our weekly crossover Thursday show. In fact, David will lead us back in here on the Locked On Jets podcast. This football season is different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Whether you have two TVs to watch two games at a time like me, or you only have one TV, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi.
All right, everybody, here we go. Welcome back to another Crossover Thursday. Of course, I'm David Drogemeyer, Locked On Chargers. I am joined today by John Butchko of Locked On Jets. And we're going to get into this crossover. I got some questions for him about the Jets. I'm sure he's got some questions for me about the Chargers. But I think the first question that I have for you, John, is, first of all, how are you doing, man? How's everything been with this kind of tumultuous season?
I'm doing well. The Jets are not doing well.
Yeah, well, my Chargers aren't doing much better than your Jets. So, but anyways, let's just jump right into this thing. Is there any chance that at all that the Jets don't take Trevor Lawrence if they do have the top pick? If they do, do you think that they would get any type of trade value for Sam Darnold?
With the Jets, you can never rule anything out, so I can't tell you with 100% certainty that the Jets are going to draft Trevor Lawrence, but I think the odds are very high when you talk about how highly touted he is as a prospect, and the struggle Sam Darnold has had this year. Now, Darnold is not going to be starting Sunday. Joe Flacco will be making his fourth start of the season as Darnold has a shoulder injury, but he just has not progressed the way you would hope he would. You know, you're still seeing a lot of erratic throws. You're still seeing inconsistent mechanics, and you're still seeing a lot of decisions that he just can't be making in year three. Surprisingly, there seems to be a lot of speculation that the Jets could still potentially get a day two pick for him. Now, really? I'm surprised because I think if you look at the body of work, you would think it would probably be a day three pick, but there are teams out there that, you know, liked him back in 2018 when he came out as a prospect. And to be fair, I mean, some of the issues you've seen have been due to the supporting cast. I mean, some of the lack of productivity has been on Darnold, but Jets have done a terrible job putting the right team around him. You know, the skilled players have been mediocre at best through his three seasons. The offensive line has been very bad. And look, you cannot ignore the fact that they have a head coach in Adam Gase who the last time
he failed to develop a franchise quarterback, saw that franchise quarterback go to a new team and have success. And that's Ryan Tannehill, who went from Miami to Tennessee, who has been very successful the last 2 years. So, you know, I think that there, it does seem like there's a school of thought in the NFL that Darnold is salvageable.
Well, speaking of that, that kind of leads me to my next question. I mean, the offense for the Jets just simply looks a lot more explosive with Joe Flacco under center. I mean, when I was watching tape on Sam Darnold, he rarely took any shots, and he completed a lot of underneath stuff, you know, close to the boundary. He'd like to hit the running back close to the boundary, let him try to make some moves, but they didn't really go deep. Do you think that they're actually just going to go with Joe Flacco the rest of the way, or is this a situation where when Sam is healthy, he's going to be right back under center?
I think when Darnold's healthy, he's going to be the quarterback. Joe Flacco doesn't have a future with this team. Now, he played very well last Monday night against the New England Patriots, but his previous two starts against Arizona and against Miami were really bad. he was not effective. He's a guy with very limited mobility. You know, yeah. part of the thing was New England really could not get to him consistently. And right. The other thing I'd say about Flacco, if you're comparing him to Darnold and you're talking about the New England game, he kind of turned back the clock to the way he looked in his early Baltimore days. But you also have to consider that was the first game all year where the Jets had all three of their starting wide receivers in the lineup. And I do think you make a very good point about Darnold, you know, his lack of decisiveness when, you know, he's making his reads. Part of that's that without his starting receivers, and again, the New England game was the first time the Jets had a healthy receiving core all season, he just could not trust guys to win one-on-one. I mean, some of the errant throws came because guys weren't winning his matchups. So I think part of the issues Darnold has had is that he can't trust anybody. You know, he can't depend on his receivers to get where they need to be. So I think that that's one of the things that's kind of hurt him.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, if Justin Herbert out there didn't have Keenan Allen, didn't have Mike Williams, and you just throw into guys he just didn't have enough time to really build any type of chemistry with, that definitely makes a difference. There's no question about that. But my next question here is, you know, one of the guys that Charger fans had their eye on, I mean, me admittedly as well, potentially drafting in this 2020 draft was Mekhi Becton. What has impressed you so far about the left tackle and, you know, just your evaluation through the first 9 games of his NFL career?
I think the evaluation's been very positive. Now, I think the one issue with Becton is that he's been banged up a little bit, so he's missed a couple of games. But he's actually been he's been more advanced than I was expecting. Now, when the Jets drafted him, you saw a guy who flashed absolute dominance at Louisville, but a guy who needed to clean up some technical things. He's looked good. You know, Louisville did not have a lot of natural pass sets in their offense when he played in college. So I thought, and a lot of other people thought, that was going to be a transition. He hasn't been perfect. I mean, he's been beaten for a few sacks, but overall I've been pleasantly surprised with how effective he's been as a pass blocker. And in the run game, he's been a dominant guy. And the Jets, the last few years have had one of the least effective run blocking offensive lines in the NFL. And it has not been good this year, but they've had success when they've run behind Becton. Becton's he's a big guy, and he's shown an ability to move people.
Yeah, I mean, big is an understatement. That guy's like a walking apartment complex. I mean, he's absolutely massive. But, I mean, I think that was part of the intrigue in, you know, getting Mekhi Becton. I mean, he had all the size in the world and the physicality that you were looking for. I think that's what really was drawing a lot of Charger fans, just because, you know, our offensive line, we just don't have a lot of physical presence type of guys on our line. So that's why, you know, a lot of people were like, maybe we should consider Mekhi Becton. But my next question here is that, you know, the Jets defense has not been very good this year. But, you know, if you could highlight their strength, what would you say that would be?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's you really challenge me when you ask me anything to talk about anything that's going well for the Jets this year. I guess to the extent there is, and in our last crossover Thursday show, we did a crossover before the Jets Monday night game a couple weeks ago with Mike DeBate of Locked On Patriots. And he talked about the Jets' run defense. And I guess to the extent there's a strength, it's they're okay against the run. Now, the Jets in recent years, as bad as they've been, they've been pretty good. They've been really good against the run. Last year, they had one of the best run defenses in the NFL. It's taken a step back this year, and there have been games where they have not been very good. There have been, I always think back to week two, first play of the game, 49ers break an 80-yard run for a touchdown. I don't know that I'd say the run defense is good, but I'd say maybe it's less bad than the other parts of the team. I think that the defensive line, they have some guys who are decent against the run. Foley Fatukasi, who's now a third-year nose tackle, and he's gotten more, he's stepped into a more prominent role since the Jets traded Steve McClendon to Tampa Bay a few weeks ago. You have Quinnen Williams, who's been kind of up and down.
Big fan of Quinnen Williams.
Yeah, he's been up and down in year two, but you know he has his moments. So the Jets have some guys who can stop the run. Again, it's not as good as it was a year ago, but I think the best way to put it is the run defense is probably less bad than everything else on the team.
Okay, fair enough. Finally, I'm going to wrap things up with this. You got a 2-7 Chargers team and an 0-9 Jets team going up against each other on Sunday. What do you think ultimately is just going to end up deciding how this game is decided?
I don't have any faith in the Jets at all. You know, you look at this on paper, the Jets are coming off their bye week. So, you know, you would think on paper that would be kind of an edge. And the Jets' bye week actually kind of fell at a good point in the schedule because it was between a Monday night game, so you don't have a short week, and then it comes before a trip across the country. So you'd think on paper that would help them. And ironically, that was not supposed to be the Jets' bye week. The schedule was rearranged due to various other games being rescheduled across the league. In fact, I think this was supposed to be the Jets' bye week because I think this game was originally supposed to be a different date. Am I right about that?
You are right about that. Yeah, the Chargers' bye week got altered because of other people's COVID-19 issues as well.
But I'm not trying to be funny here, but I just have a tough time seeing the Jets put together a winning game. I mean, the Jets haven't even been competitive most weeks this year. There's really not – I just mentioned that there's not really anything the Jets do effectively. So – I mean, I hate to say it, but I just have a tough time seeing the Jets win this game, but beat anybody.
Hey, I mean, that's totally fair. But, I mean, I think that's going to do it for my questions on my side for the Jets. I think we're going to switch things over and let you ask me some questions about the Chargers, and we're going to do that right after this.
It's Crossover Thursday here on the Locked On Podcast Network. This is John from Locked On Jets along with David from Locked On Chargers. So, David, I guess the first question has to be about the rookie quarterback for the Chargers, Justin Herbert. What have your impressions been so far?
Well, I think everyone and their mom has been incredibly impressed by Justin Herbert, and nobody, and I mean nobody, expected to, one, see him this quickly, and two, watch him perform at such a high level and really put good game after good game after good game on tape, minus the Miami game. I mean, he definitely didn't play as well as he had played before, although he still had three total touchdowns with the one interception. But I think you see him grow week after week, and, you know, you love all the physical traits, you know, the size, the arm, you know, also the intelligence. The guy is an incredibly intelligent, smart player. And also, you know, he's a guy that's very dedicated to his craft. You know, he knew there were some things he needed to work on coming out of college, going into the pro game. He contacted some outside help, got that help, and it seems like it is definitely manifesting itself out there on Sundays. As a Charger fan and as an analyst, nobody expected to see Justin Herbert as the starting quarterback of the Chargers. We all expected it to be Tyrod Taylor. I mean, he was going to be the bridge guy. You know, let him sit under him, learn. They're kind of similar styles. You know, he's not as elusive as Tyrod Taylor is, but they model, you know, they play the same type of game. But, you know, the unfortunate injury happened to Tyrod Taylor, and Justin Herbert's thrust into the game, and he just performed so well that he forces Anthony Lynn's hand to make him the starting quarterback right away. But it's been fun. I'll put it that way. It's been really fun to watch him mature, and looking forward to what the rest of the season looks like for Justin Herbert as a starting quarterback.
Can you talk a little bit about the skill players Herbert relies on the most?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think you got, you know, Keenan Allen, who's one of the best route running wide receivers in the NFL. I mean, he can absolutely get open against any corner. I firmly believe that. You're going to see him in the slot. You're going to see him out wide. You're going to see Mike Williams as well as the other receiver on the other side of things. He's a, more of a jump ball guy. He's hot and cold. You don't know, you know, he's not going to be a guy that's going to give you 9, 10, 11 catches in a game. That's more of your Keenan Allen. But he is the guy that'll get you 4 or 5 catches for 80, 90 yards and get crazy, you know, yards per reception and make these ridiculous acrobatic catches. I mean, he has the ability to do that. He's a big guy. He's 6'4", and he can jump out of the building. So that's kind of what you're going to see from him. You have a couple of tight ends that are pretty good quality players. You got Hunter Henry, who is in a contract year, and, you know, he's played okay up to this point. He just hasn't had the big touchdown numbers, but he is a guy that has very strong, soft hands. He catches a lot of footballs. I think the relationship's still being built with him and Justin Herbert. And then in the running game, you're going to see a running back by committee approach with Kalen Ballage probably getting the lion's share of the carries, mixed in with their rookie running back Joshua Kelly. They're waiting for Austin Eckler to get healthy. I mean, he's a huge loss, a guy that is a major catalyst for this offense. But he is still on IR and has not been designated to return yet, so he will not play against the Jets on Sunday. But, yeah, those are probably the key weapons for the Chargers and guys that you should expect to see them try to utilize against the Jets on Sunday.
I heard you mention Kalen Ballage, who spent time with the Jets earlier this year.
Yes, he did. Yeah, I mean, Kalen Ballage, a guy that Anthony Atlanta, former running back, really likes. He's got that, you know, bigger body. I mean, he says he's got some good straight line speed, and he's, you know, played pretty well as the Chargers running back. I mean, they've given him an opportunity to come in. I mean, they like the way he is physical and he runs through tackles and he's falling forward. He gets north and south. He doesn't try to dance too much. That's something that Chargers coach Anthony Lynn and Shane Steichen want in their offense. But one thing that we need to see change a little bit is throwing a little bit more on first down instead of running. Every time most of the time when they run the football on first downs, they just haven't had the amount of success. They're only getting about 2.3 yards per carry on first down. When they throw the ball, they're having a much, much better success rate on first down. So that's probably something to watch out for on Sunday to see if they kind of switch things up and go to more of their strength. I know it's against Anthony Lynn's ideology to throw the ball first, but I think hopefully he can look at the numbers and just see that the Chargers are more productive when they throw the football on early downs.
I have to ask you this because I think all Jets fans will want the answer to this on Ballage. Have you guys have you guys encountered the Kalen Ballage trying to pick up a blitz experience? Because it's not pleasant, we can tell you.
I mean, I think we've only seen it a few times and he's been okay. But yeah, it's definitely something that we're going to have to watch out for. Thanks for the heads up on that. But it seems like the Jets didn't really give him too much opportunity to run the football. I think they only gave him a couple of carries in the games that they had him for. And hey, that might not have been the role or what the Jets wanted him to or brought him in to do. But that's something we'll have to keep an eye on in the future.
Well, the Jets have a 37-year-old running back they have to run their offense through. So, I mean, there aren't enough carries to go around.
all respect to Frank Gore for sure, though. He definitely is a ghost.
Oh, he's a Hall of Famer. But no question. He's not at the point of his career where he should be getting the kind of carries the Jets are giving him right
now. No way. So
you mentioned Anthony Lynn, Chargers head coach, actually a longtime former Jets assistant.
Yes.
What's the situation like for him right now?
Well, I mean, when you've lost, I think, like 16 one-score games in the last 2 years, the seat is hot, okay? It's definitely hot. And you have a rookie quarterback who has had a lot of turnover at the coaching staff position ahead of him. At Oregon, he had 3 different offensive coordinators, 3 different head coaches, and it seems like his first in the NFL might be another coaching change, because if the Chargers don't turn things around, and I mean drastically, they're definitely probably going to see Anthony Lynn head out the door. They're going to see George Stewart, the special teams coordinator, out the door, probably the defensive coordinator Gus Bradley out the door. But I think those two guys that I mentioned, Stewart and Bradley, are probably going to head out the door before Mr. Anthony Lynn is, but Charger fans are not happy with him. They all are calling for his head. I'm sure Jets fans are probably saying something similar about Adam Gase. But yeah, they want they don't want anything to do with Anthony Lynn. As far as the fan base is concerned, that ship has sailed, and they're ready to get rid of him right now.
And my last question, just take us through some of the key players on the defense for the Chargers.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the main guy, of course, is Joey Bosa. And Joey Bosa missed the last two games because he was in concussion protocol. He was cleared from concussion protocol today, so he will be out there for the Chargers on Sunday. He is one of the premier pass rushers in the NFL, and he is a guy the Chargers desperately, desperately miss when he is not on the field. It is literally night and day. It's either you get pressure or you don't. You get pressure when he's on the field, and you get nothing when he is not on the field. It's really that much of a night and day situation. And then I think you're looking in the secondary. You got Rayshon Jenkins as your free safety, your strong safety. You got the second-year guy, Nazir Adderley, as your free safety. You got Chris Harris Jr., who just got designated to return off of IR. He did return to practice today, so we might see him come back on Sunday, which is a very good thing. And you got two pretty decent corners on the outside with Casey Hayward and Michael Davis, although Casey Hayward has gotten attacked a couple of times. He's been targeted, and teams are starting to find they're having some success against against Casey Hayward. And Casey Hayward is getting a little bit long in the tooth. As a corner, he is approaching age 30. So, you know, whenever you hit that, you either have to change your game or you got to kind of move out, you know, move to a different position. So, I mean, that's something the Chargers are definitely entertaining. And then you got Melvin Ingram, who was supposed to be Joey Bosa's, you know, partner in crime, but he's just not really getting after the quarterback with any type of success so far this year. He has dealt with injuries, but those are probably your key guys you're looking at. You got also got your rookie first-round pick in Kenneth Murray at linebacker. He's a guy that's kind of had a hot and cold situation so far. I mean, you got rookie growing pains. It's part of it. But I think those are some of your key guys that you're looking at on Sunday, guys that are expected to make some big plays for you.
All right. Well, David, great chatting with you. And here's to better days for both of our teams.
Yeah, hopefully we can redo some things in the draft and we can both get back on track here in the next few years. But I appreciated the conversation, had a good time talking to you, and good luck the rest of the way.
That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy our show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. I hope you have a great Thursday, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow for our final show of the week, where we will preview Jets Chargers.